Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Tuesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer. David Faber has the morning off. Stocks are looking to rebound as we watch some pre-announcements roll in from Q4. We'll watch Washington, the House gets set for impeachment proceedings, and the U.S. expanding vaccine eligibility. Our roadmap begins with the corporate backlash, though. More companies distance themselves from President Trump. Social media is cracked down. Facebook bans Stop the Steal. Twitter pulls QAnon content. And the COVID about face. The White House expected to make some sweeping changes in the vaccine rollout guidelines. First up, though, Jim, we're going to talk about corporate America's ongoing response and really the way in which this growing list of companies is changing the face of campaign finance.
Look, the more we learn about what happened Wednesday, the more we understand that it was even more violent of our principles as a nation. And one after another, companies are realizing, look, we got to just stay away from anything that would fund an attempted coup, a putsch, an insurrection. That's how they view it, by the way. And they know that that's going to alienate their customers. I don't necessarily think that there's very high-mindedness here. I think there's just a recognition that Wednesday became a third rail. And political donations that go to someone or anyone that ends up supporting insurrection is not good business. Yes, there are people at every company that actually feel with their heart what a united country could be if they get involved. And this will unite the country more, I have to believe. But I think the Wednesday nadir is forcing a lot of people to really soul search about whether they're ruining their business if they're throwing money at the people who want to cause an insurrection.
Right. Do you think it results in a wave of boycotts from either side? Is there earnings liability from being forced into taking a stance like this?
I always think there is, but remember what happened with Facebook. It turned out that they turned the other cheek, went a little bit more small, medium-sized business. Next thing you know, all the advertisers come back. There have been issues with YouTube. The advertisers come back. The advertisers are searching desperately to try to find young people. A lot of these companies are involved with youth. There have been a couple surveys going on which say that a lot of companies are trying very hard, say, to be on an Amazon. And if they're at all affiliated with someone who is who killed people at Capitol Hill, that's the equivalent of backing someone in felony murder. Felony murder being something that makes everybody involved culpable. I think that this is a revolutionary thing because companies are recognizing, wow, maybe we were in bed. Maybe we helped a lot of people who tried, who had organizations that tried to storm the Capitol. And while it is absolutely true that there were senators and representatives who still voted in favor of believing that the election was a big lie, the advertisers and the companies that are pulling out recognize, wow, it is going to really taint our brand if we continue to find that we may have backed organizations that favored overthrow of our nation.
Right. It goes beyond, of course, campaign contributions, Jim. PayPal taking down sites that raised funds for people who went to the attack. CRM, we still don't know exactly how they have taken action against some ways in which the RNC uses the platform and the technology, but that's something that we are reporting this morning as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Salesforce is a little bit opaque. I think they'll come out with more of a clear view. Mark Benioff has always thought about these issues well ahead in advance of any of the companies that we're talking about. I just want to be sure that people understand when I talk about the idea of insurrection, I'm just looking and reading the conventional media. I'm not some sort of Yahoo saying, you know, this is what happened. The more we find out about what happened Wednesday, the more we realize that it was an attempted insurrection. And that is not something that any company can possibly be affiliated with, given the fact that this is not a question of some of the issues that have caused boycotts before. I mean, this is the Republic, breaking the Republic versus keeping the Republic. Again, I come back to Timothy Snyder's excellent piece this week in New York Times Magazine. I suggest everyone read that, which is all about the idea that breaking the Republic is something that none of the companies on this wall can afford to support because everyone will target them. Everyone, you, me, advertisers, we'll all target them because we're not in favor of insurrection. Again, I always like to default to Lincoln. And Lincoln talked about the notion of the Union versus the insurrection. The fact that we have to even mention Lincoln is a little bizarre. But this is what happens when they cross the Potomac. That's what his biggest fear was that Robert E. Lee would cross the Potomac. And suddenly we find a Confederate flag in the Capitol. And it's a little chilling, Carl. Little chilling.
Yeah, it is.
It's really
this
scary
morning, Jim,
as all get
this
out.
Is very, it is. It's disturbing. This morning, CBS reports that the president admitted to Leader McCarthy that he was partly to blame for the violence and that multiple Republicans confirmed those details to CBS News. We're going to hear from him today as he emerges for the first time really since the attack in Texas, where he'll make an appearance at the border wall. Is there upside risk to the markets if the president even hints that he's taking some blame, that the process a week from Wednesday will be more orderly than we think?
Not if he also says at the same time that that it was a landslide and that the election was stolen. Then it'll have the opposite effect. It will make it so we even need more National Guard, more people to state houses. It's in his hands. If he continues to go with the big lie of what he thinks is the big truth, then I think that it's game one for the insurrectionists. Again, I'm picking my word carefully because they were insurrectionists. And I think that there's a lot of people who woke up and recognized that their opponents were not people who want them to continue in government. They want a different government. And so if the president says, listen, it was a big landslide, but I take some blame, all that we're going to hear is the big landslide, and people are going to want to pull the microphone. Because I think that the media from the vast, I know he would call it the mainstream fake media, the media that issues a lot of lies. But after what happened Wednesday, I think it's more empirical than anecdotal. I mean, we saw it. Right. Also, when you see the Capitol Guards being attempted to be killed, it's just very sobering. So to hear once again that it was a landslide is to say, okay, well, we accept that. We accept what happened because we're trying to change the government. And again, I want to emphasize, I am not making any breakthrough comments here. I am just strictly looking at what the history books are going to say when they come out in the next few years.
I don't think anybody looks askance at what you're saying,
okay,
Jim. NBC this morning is reporting that House Democrats were briefed by U.S. Capitol Police about the specific threats to the Capitol in the coming days, and that the purchase of a bulletproof vest is a reimbursable expense. So that's sort of where we are, Jim. And it brings me back to what Sheryl Sandberg said yesterday from Facebook, that they've banned the phrase "stop the steal," that Zuckerberg's not going anywhere, that their controls, Jim, were better than any of their competitors, and that they won't lift the POTUS ban, and that's not reviewable by their new board.
Well, look, I better late than never. All these sites feasted on the traffic that came from this. I think that at a certain point, we're going to have a commission which analyzes how much these sites played a role in an organized attempt to overthrow the country. It is a role that they did so inadvertently, but I think increasingly we're going to not buy the word inadvertently. We're going to say, you know what, that doesn't fit in the lexicon. It is purposeful because you wanted the money. Now, they may say, well, we don't really want the money, but it happened. It happened. I do think in the end, I want to see what happens to the 100 representatives, 120 representatives that still voted in favor of something that was endorsed by the insurrectionists. I don't like to call them a mob. They're insurrectionists. It's a good term because it's what they were.
Yep. Yeah, look up the term and you'll understand why Jim's using that language.
Yeah.
So we turn our attention to the House today and tonight and tomorrow. It's not just about impeachment, of course, also about the 25th Amendment and pressure on the vice president. Eamon Javers has a lot more on that this morning. Hi, Eamon.
Yeah, hi, Carl. There are real security concerns here in Washington as we gear up for that impeachment vote, which is expected tomorrow. The 25th Amendment not expected to be undertaken today by the Vice President of the United States, although Democrats in the House are pushing him to do that. Meanwhile, we're learning that Capitol Police officers are under investigation by Capitol Police officials for potentially aiding and abetting that insurrectionist Trump loyalist mob on Wednesday. They're trying to get to the bottom of just how badly the Capitol Police may have been penetrated by this ideology. And separately, the Washington Post now this morning reporting new concerns inside the Secret Service. The Washington Post reporting that the Secret Service is investigating one of its officers who posted on social media accusing lawmakers of treason for their involvement in counting the Electoral College votes last week. The officer's post also said it's offense time finally. The Secret Service giving this statement to NBC News saying the U.S. Secret Service carries out its law enforcement mission in an objective and apolitical manner. Any allegation that an employee is not carrying out their duties in that manner will be investigated. So all of those are the security concerns surrounding this upcoming inauguration of the president, as the FBI warning yesterday of potential armed protests in up to 50 state capitals over the next week. So all of that, sort of the stew boiling around this idea of impeachment as it moves forward on Capitol Hill. We do expect a number of Republicans to support the impeachment vote on the House floor tomorrow. Unclear just how many. And then, of course, the prospects, guys, are unclear for the impeachment in the United States Senate, how quickly they can conduct a trial and move forward with a vote on removal of the president, and how many votes there are for removal of the president in the Senate. All that unclear right now. Back over to you.
Eamon, thank you for that. Our Eamon Javers. Jim, it does bring us to the Journal op-ed this morning by the editorial board. They argue that Biden should call off the House Democrats on the impeachment chase, says it could let the president compete with Biden for attention, give the then former president a platform to rally his supporters. In their words, it makes more sense to let him repair in new irrelevance to Mar-a-Lago. Well, what do you think?
That was the stance of Joe Biden a couple of weeks ago, which is that if you ignore the president, then you create a certainly a higher minded way to be able to stay below the controversies. I don't know. I mean, that was the that was Biden's plan. It's kind of an oddity that it became the Journal's plan. But that's, you know, again, post Wednesday. I mean, Wednesday was a really important day in our country. And I know that there are a lot of people who want to say that it wasn't. But there are many people in overthrows or attempted overthrows in other countries through the years that would also claim they weren't being insurrectionists. And we learned later that they were. I mean, what do we have, a police force within a police force here too? I mean, I think all these things just cut in favor of President-elect Biden is trying to stay above the fray and let's move on. Not unlike, I remember I hated that Ford pardoned Nixon because I wanted Nixon to stand trial. But in retrospect, what President Ford was doing was moving forward and trying to unite the country. That was a historically, I found out that I was wrong. I hated Nixon so much and felt that there really was, it was time for a High Crimes and Misdemeanors Truth and Reconciliation Committee. And President Ford wisely just said, we're going forward. I didn't think it was wise. It was. I think that it would be wise to just go forward if I were Biden. And I liked President Ford. I thought he was a terrific guy. But it was only after I realized that I was mistaken in my judgment that we shouldn't just have a show trial.
Right. It's hard to believe how much history is rhyming right now, Jim.
Oh, is it ever?
We do want to tell our viewers that Las Vegas Sands has announced that its founder, chairman, and CEO, Sheldon Adelson, has died at the age of 87 due to complications from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The son of Jewish immigrants became one of the world's richest men by building a casino empire which expanded from Las Vegas to Macau to Singapore. Adelson, also a major donor to Republican politicians, including the president. Jim took it public in 2004, became extremely wealthy, also a huge proponent for Israel. He's going to leave a legacy well beyond gaming.
Yeah, I think that anyone who has visited Israel knows his name is everywhere, but most prominent places. But I think his legacy, he had a vision that China, that Macau, was going to be a place of great opportunity, not just the United States. Steve Wynn shared that vision. Steve Wynn obviously not heard from because of issues involving nothing to do with his business and, well, nothing to do with the business of Wynn. But these are remarkable people who had a great vision. I think that people will say, how can you not mention that he backed President Trump? Well, I don't know. Belichick. You know, the people make mistakes. Nelson Peltz came on air and said, I voted for the wrong guy. But Sheldon Adelson stood for worldwide prominence of what the United States, let's say, believed in, which is capitalism. And I think that I've always felt that he and Steve Wynn were giants in terms of trying to be able to get it so that the Chinese recognize that there's another way to do business. I don't think that's what he's going to be celebrated on right now because it's so convoluted how we feel about China. But Adelson saw it. I always called it Macau Sands.
That's well said, Jim. And our thoughts are with his family. Sheldon Adelson, dead at the age of 87.
When it comes to our ability to manufacture, yesterday our partner already announced what I'm going to announce also myself today, that we feel now very confident that we will increase dramatically our production for this year, up to 2 billion doses, and we feel comfortable that we will be able to deliver that.
That's Pfizer's Albert Bourla talking about the fact that they have more vaccine right now than they can use. In the meantime, Jim, these new guidelines expanding eligibility to everyone 65 plus, including those with conditions and not waiting for that second dose. This is exactly what Gottlieb called for earlier in the week.
Yeah, Dr. Gottlieb got this dead right now. What I want to know is how many, if you started with a system which said the governors can do it. And then you come up with these rules. The governors, what are they going to do? I mean, there's just a gigantic backlog. Let's just use New York, for example. No one really knows exactly where you are when you stand in New York because they don't know. You don't know whether they've done what workers they've done. Are you 1B? Are you whatever? Or a lot of us who are registered in New Jersey, we don't know. We got some thank you for that we registered. So I don't know whether this is supposed to supersede. I'm sure it isn't. But again, the government talks with forked tongue. I mean, who's supposed to play this game? Is it the feds? Is it the state? Is it CVS? Is it Walgreens? I don't know. I mean, I think this is terrific because one thing is certain. We got a lot more vaccines than we have people who are taking the vaccine. Remember, we were able to vaccinate millions of people in 3 weeks in New York City in 1947 on smallpox. We obviously haven't been able to do that now. But I think best practices from states merged with the 65 is certainly going to make it so that maybe we have more of a federalist system. I mean, I know I've reserved my 65. I'm going to Florida. And I'll go to Florida twice, even if it has to be quarantined, because I want it. And if because I believe that these scientists are unbelievably good. Wouldn't this be great if you can just go and get it, which is what we thought it would be? I think we're going to have a vaccine glut. Dr. Gottlieb suggested that that's the case. This Pfizer news is fabulous. I got to congratulate Pfizer. I mean, what a great job.
No one's arguing there, Jim. Yeah. And I know you've been talking on Twitter this morning about the prospects for J&J. Maybe we can discuss that after the break.
Sure.
And how that might help things even further in February. Along with some calls this morning on Neo and Wells. We'll watch the 10-year 118 this morning. More Squawk on the Street continues in a minute. Let's get Jim's Mad Dash watching some Zoom today.
Yeah, if I told you there was a stock that was at 588 that's now at 337, you'd say, well, that's a disaster. Well, no, that happens to be Zoom. Now, this is a crucial moment, Carl, because they're offering $1.5 billion in stocks and trade tomorrow. The millennials have been cited as being people who just love secondaries. So this could be a fulcrum moment in wondering whether Zoom regains its momentum. I happen to think Zoom is an unbelievably good company, and I think Eric Yuan is doing a terrific job. He's adding a lot of new features, but the stock has been terrible. Maybe this is going to clean up what was most concerned about. We've been seeing this process where after these secondaries trade, this is a primary, this is Zoom stock, they move up. So I want to watch this as a let's say, a demonstration of the real power of this market. Can this stock reverse its trajectory because people are finally going to be excited saying, aha, that's what was the problem was. It wasn't the business. It was the offering. So keep track of this one closely.
All right. So speaking of, you mentioned secondaries. Is Lemonade as good a tell right now?
Lemonade has been a short squeeze from beyond beyond hell if you're a short seller, and this could pop it. This $3 million. But remember, that's not a lot of stock. But Lemonade has been straight up. I like the company very much. A lot of people on the staff of Mad Money use it. This is an insurance company. It's not a Lemonade stand. That said, it's been a short squeeze, and sometimes a stock offering alleviates the short. This may be one of those. I was commenting last night that right. whoever is short this thing has just been crushed. Well, they got an opportunity to cover if they take it.
Do you think, I mean, given, not that this is all part of the same basket, Jim, because the Zoom correction's been going on for a while, but Lemonade, Tesla down for the first time in since late December, Bitcoin, you think fevers are breaking?
I think that maybe they're out of money for now. You got to get that new stimulus check. I do think that there are a lot of people who are saying, ah, wow, I've made a ton of money. And you know what? It's not made until you take it off the table. I don't know. Will Lemonade secondary bring more buyers in? Let's see. Another great test of what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. We got some good pre-announcements this morning as well. Some big news in the chip sector out of Intel and Taiwan Semi. More Squawk in the Street continues in a moment. A lot of Fed speak on tap this morning, Jim, as we watch the 10-year did get up to 118. Two's tens, steepest in 3.5 years. Is this a breakout?
I think that that's what the bank stocks are saying. But it's interesting, the housing stocks are saying it's not a breakout. You had a really big move in Lennar yesterday. So I think that there are people who are saying, oh, well, wait a second, rates, maybe rates are going to go higher. I better buy a house now. There's one group. There are other people who are saying, listen, it doesn't matter. Rates are not going to go up so much. The bank stocks are so clearly saying, you got to buy us before we report because we finally have something good to say. Watch the bank stocks to see whether this movement is for real because those stocks have been the best in this market other than the oil stocks, which I think are trading much more on the idea that supply has been cut back. Look at these bank stocks. They've been trading like tech stocks, like fintech stocks. Wow. Walmart's a fintech stock, by the way. Let's not forget that in a kind of true nuttiness of what this market's about.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about UBS goes to buy on Wells this morning. JMP takes Goldman to 320. So we will definitely watch the financials. There's the opening bell and the S&P heat map. We are getting some breaking news on GM. We'll go to Phil LeBeau this morning. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Carl. General Motors has a new brand. And I know you might be sitting there saying, what? Another brand at GM? It is called BrightDrop. This is where they're going to be selling electric vehicles. And the first vehicle that they're just showing, Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, showing it in her virtual CES presentation, it is an electric commercial delivery van. General Motors is going to be selling at least 500 of these. First one's coming later this year. FedEx will be getting the first 500. So again, guys, commercial electric vans, that's where the focus is for the auto industry when it comes to electric vehicles. Also announcing the EP1. Think of this as an electric palette. This is an animation of the EP1 that they just announced. Essentially, it's for the last mile. So that if you're talking about deliveries from up to the door or into a certain location where there's a number of addresses, that's where you might see the EP1. That will be going through, and it's being tested with FedEx Express. As you take a look at shares of General Motors, keep in mind, this is the big push for them. It's all about the EV. We are going to be talking with Mary Barra exclusively about this announcement, the new brand, which is called BrightDrop, as well as the growing plans for electric vehicles. That's coming up. Squawk Alley. You guys do not want to miss this interview coming up at 11:30. Guys, back to you.
To be really
that
significant.
That is big, Phil. We'll see
it. Oh, I'm sorry, we'll Carl. I just wanted to ask about Lordstown, where they indicate that they have demand for 100,000 similar vehicles.
Yep.
I mean, this is one hot segment.
Well, that's a pickup truck.
Right.
So what you're looking at, though, but Jim, it gets to your point. You've talked about this extensively on your show. It's all about the commercial market. Right. And as much as you and I will talk about how we want electric vehicles, and there is a consumer market, the automakers all believe the commercial markets, whether it's delivery vans or work trucks, that's the market that's going to take off.
Whew. Amazing, Carl. This is
what do you think, Jim? I mean, yesterday the news was about, I mean, some huge realignments in the business. Yesterday it was Ford Brazil, and now this.
This Ford Brazil, I can't stress this enough. This is the new Ford. This is the Farley Ford. I mean, look, they took their medicine. I mean, we're talking about a gigantic charge, $4.1 billion, including, by the way, $2.5 billion in cash. They're not going to stop selling vehicles. I keep reading that. No, they're going to continue to sell the profitable Ranger line. Again, you've got a pickup there, but this is Farley saying we are done losing money. And if you don't think we mean business, we are even closing one of the most important manufacturing markets we have. They'll probably take some heat for it. Ford, Phil, this is not the old Ford.
Jim, let me tell you this. If you went into Alan Mulally's office when he was at Ford, there was a painting on the wall of Henry Ford, and I believe the quote underneath, and I could be getting this wrong, was something to the extent of a vehicle for every person everywhere. And in that painting, it was about foreign markets that Ford was going to, Henry Ford envisioned them ultimately selling in, including Brazil, in South America, all these other countries down there. And for years, Jim, you would do these reports, or I would do these reports, and they were losing billions of dollars. South America has been nothing but a money loser for them. They believe this will be a part of turning it around. And you're right. Jim Farley is doing what needs to be done. If you're not making money in a particular area or on a particular vehicle, stop building it. And that's what he's pushing Ford to finally move in that direction.
Phil, I've got to tell you, the idea that we are not going to hear about Brazil on a conference call, you and I are so right. I used to speak to Alan Mulally, and I'd say, well, Alan, you're doing all these great things, but Brazil. And then Mark Fields would get it. Well, you're doing all these great things, but Brazil.
Yep.
No, Farley will not hear that anymore. And by the way, he's got roots in, he's born down there. So I think that you're right. The picture of what Henry Ford stood for is something that the Ford family realizes. I think, you know what, we got to go with Farley. The board's got to go with Farley. I'm going with Farley. Carl, this is so significant that I think that people have to start focusing. I like GM when we had that interview. These companies are tired of looking at Tesla go up every day. They want to play a role. They want to be in the mix.
Phil, we'll see in a bit with Mary Barr, of course, as Phil said at 11:30. Jim, it's an interesting time because you got this GM news. You got Amazon investing in Rivian. You've got the new Mustang Mach-E. And then you got crude at 11-month highs.
Look, I think that there could be a case that people, the young buyers, of course, of stocks, want to set back fossil fuels. But the traditional industrial, Goldman Sachs had a piece today saying, listen, it's a great reflation trade. That's not what the young people are thinking. The young people are looking at Plug Power. And they see this Renault deal. And they say, you know what? Plug Power is the way to go. That's hydrogen, green hydrogen that leaves no footprint. I think, once again, Ford wants to be selling the F-150 that's going to be electric, this unbelievable interview that Phil's got with Mary Barra. And you want to buy crude at a certain point, crude is going to run headlong into EV. A lot of people feel in 3 years EV will go from 3% to 10%. I think that EV's got all the money in the world, as we keep hearing. And I think that's going to accelerate the demise of this giant move in the oil stocks. I'd be very careful of those. They're a trade. They are not an investment.
Right. Right. Some of the names here, not really. The leaders on the Dow right now are really Goldman and Walmart, too, Jim, with this new fintech startup that it's working on with the backers of Robinhood as the evolution of Walmart continues from a simple retailer to more of an advertising and financial colossus.
Yeah, my chapter just owns Walmart, and I said, ugh, I hope this stock isn't up big because it's not sustainable. And the stock jumped to 150, and it's up to 149. And you know, Walmart's been doing so many great things, and it hasn't meant anything. And this press release moved the stock up, and I think that I'm a little jaundiced about that. I think people should be buying Walmart because the company's doing well. But if it takes a press release to talk fintech, geez, I mean, there you go. The people are the buyers. If they hear fintech and they hear anything involving crypto, they just want in. And I think that that's going to end up being foolish. Right now, you should own Walmart because Walmart's doing well. But I'm sure Doug McMillon is laughing, saying, you know, look, we, this is just a press release. We're doing really well. How come we're not getting any credit for that? And the answer is because the younger buyers, the Robinhood buyers, the Merry Men buyers, they just want to be in something that's a play on crypto. They don't seem to care that Walmart's doing well. They'd rather just see that they're getting into this business. Hey, if Target gets in, Target can go up 10%. Target stock is doing really well just on being Target. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if they said, you know what? What we're going to do is we're going to sell, we're going to take Bitcoin. It's like, holy cow, that's Target. That's a different, Brian Cornell is revolutionary. Let's buy Target. No, he's not going to do it. By the way, he's not going to do that. But that would move that stock to 210. A press release about Bitcoin.
Jim, you've been making day after day points about the chips and Taiwan Semi in particular. Today it's this news about Taiwan Semi and Intel trying to find solutions here for 7-nanometer.
Yeah, look, Taiwan Semi is the jewel of the crown of the United States semiconductor market, except for it's in Taiwan. I think that when you see a lot of saber-rattling about how we're going to defend Taiwan, that Taiwan Semi may be the most important company when it comes to supporting U.S. technology. The idea that Intel's running up the flag and going to them, wow. Intel's always been the great manufacturer. It's Intel and Micron. Everybody else kind of uses Taiwan Semi because they're so good at it. This is, once again, a recognition that the old Intel is no more. But when Pompeo goes over and talks about Taiwan, make no mistake about it, that's about Taiwan Semi. Because we can't live without Taiwan Semi. We outsource the making of technology of semiconductors to Taiwan Semi. And the fact that it's not talked about enough is a shame, because if that goes, if suddenly the Chinese say, you know what, this is just another Hong Kong, well, they would cut us off 9 ways to Sunday. So let's watch to see if that happens. That's something that the president, if he had been a little more focused and less arbitrary and capricious, he would have been defending Taiwan Semi instead of kind of, you know, putting someone on a blacklist of selling stock. But they had their way of doing things. And they had their way of doing things.
There was a disturbing interview in Foreign Policy yesterday, Jim, with Rex Tillerson, a former Secretary of State, who believes that we will face military conflict with China within the decade, and it will be related to Taiwan. He believes Xi's endgame is to reclaim that, and at some point the U.S., in Tillerson's view, is going to have to ask, we have to ask ourselves, what are we willing to do to protect our interests and Taiwanese interests in that island.
Didn't really care for Tillerson when he was running Exxon. He has become, he's like George Kennan in 1947. This guy is a true visionary, and I think that he's absolutely right. Look, by the way, this country has almost no COVID. It's a very organized, terrific country that's really a great ally of ours. We don't recognize it because the Chinese won't let us recognize it. But make no mistake about it, they're a very key manufacturing arm of the United States. I think that Tillerson, once again, has distinguished himself as a visionary, tough, hard visionary, but Taiwan does represent what the Chinese want. I really wish, Carl, that they listened to him. If they had listened to him, he's such an important figure when it comes to these things.
That was also one of his complaints, was trying to get listened to in the administration. So we're right at 3,800 on this Tuesday morning. Obviously, a lot of news to come today. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Morning, Bob.
Good morning, guys. Happy Tuesday. And you're right, 3,800 and no follow through to the modest sell-off that we got yesterday. This has been characteristic the last couple of months. You get one down day and nothing next day. There's no real trend on the downside. Take a look at the sectors. And today is looking a lot like the way the year so far has been shaping up, with cyclical groups like energy stocks, bank stocks leading, consumer discretionary to classic cyclicals. Tech are flattish. The exception this year, as Jim has pointed out, are semiconductor stocks. They've been performing really well. The rest of tech has been slightly underperforming the overall market, and defensive names like consumer staples and healthcare generally are underperforming. This has been the trend for a while. As for the market, it really depends on the vaccine rollout. Not so great in the beginning of the year. It looks like it's getting a little bit better. In terms of what's moving the markets here, think of the buckets, vaccines and stimulus versus virus and taxes. That'll be a bit down the road, taxes, but that's on the horizon. And of course, for vaccines versus virus, that's determining the pace of the recovery. Those vaccine rollouts starting to look a little bit better after a very slow rollout. Other issues, valuations. S&P 500 is more than 16% above its 200-day moving average. That's really stretched. Normally, the S&P is about, 8 or 9% above its 200-day moving average if it's bullish. This is really bullish. And the yield curve we've been talking about, that's been steepening, helping out things for the bank stocks, but could be an issue down the road here. In terms of the leadership, it's been shifting. We've been noting this for the last several days now. Energy, banks, and materials have become the leadership groups now. Technology is generally flat, except for semis, which have been outperforming, and consumer staples and utilities have been the lagging groups. It's really banks that you want to be looking at. As a group, banks are up 30% since the election. That is far outperformed. What's the S&P up? 11 or 12%. So remember, banks underperformed all last year, and they are now playing catch up. Look at these moves up in the big money center banks like Citigroup up 50% and JP Morgan up 34%. Even the super regional banks are all up about 30%, like Bank of America and PNC. Those are big moves. And this yield curve higher is benefiting other groups that you might not think of necessarily, like the online brokers. Charles Schwab has a very significant banking operation. Schwab has moved up aggressively in the last few days. That is a historic high for Charles Schwab that we're sitting at right now. Bank of America, in fact, upgraded them today precisely because of the banking operations here being positively impacted by the yield curve. So remember, banks up about 30%. And of course, the issue, Carl, for us now as we go into earnings season is banks are a leadership group going into earnings season. And they're, of course, traditionally start. JP Morgan will start on Friday. Carl, we haven't seen this in a long, long time. The banks are a leadership group going into earnings season. Normally, for recent memory, they've been lagging. We'll see what goes on. And remember, a lot of these banks, even with the moves up, they're still relatively cheap. It's a perfect setup going into Friday's start of earnings season. Carl, back to you.
Friday's going to be big, Bob. Thanks. Let's get to Rick Santelli, who, of course, is watching the curve, yields, and the Fed speak that we're going to get today. Hey, Rick.
Hello, Carl. Indeed. The Fed speakers probably are going to address some of the issues we're going to be discussing. Look at a 1 week of tens. Looks to be the sixth day we're going to close higher. We'll have to see. But right now we are up a basis point. When I say close higher, I'm talking yields, which would correspond to closing lower in price, of course. And as we sit at 1.16%, so 116, we're up on the year 24 basis points. We settled the last day of the year at 92 basis points. That's basically a Fed tightening. Remember what the Fed says. Lower for longer on the short end, but the market still has a bit of a pulse, even with a huge thumb on the scale. Open the chart up to March. You can see we're aiming for that 119 area. And I believe that was the 18th of March's close. And when we switch gears to boons, here's 1 month of the boons versus tens. You can clearly see that we set the stage here. All rates are moving up together, and there's very different dynamics for each economy, of course. Ours right now is the potential for lots of spending and how that may impact not only interest rates, but the dollar, inflation, all in play potentially. And the dollar index, well, look at 1 week of the dollar index and realize that last Tuesday, we had a 32-month low close, and we've been pretty much moving up every session. Five ups. Today, unlike Treasuries, it looks like it's taking a bit of a break, but it's too close to call. And finally, the biggest question everybody is asking is, where are rates going to go? How fast can they go? Real quickly, let's go to the whiteboard. Here's 10-year note yields starting in September of 2019. Here's that 119 I was referencing in March. We're getting very close to testing it. But if we go back in time, this is most likely the zone we're going to be visiting between 150 and 170. The question is, until we start to slow down on this, we're guns hot. We could get there awfully quick. Carl and Jim, back to you.
Nice to see the whiteboard back out, Rick. We'll see you in a bit. Rick Santelli. Coming up later this morning, Albertsons getting a lift on quarterly results with a beat and a raise. Stocks at an all-time high. How's the supermarket operator navigating the pandemic? We'll talk to Vivek Sankaran in the next hour. Don't go away.
We must plan our economic resurgence. We simply cannot stay closed until the vaccine hits critical mass. The cost is too high. we will have nothing left to open. We must reopen the economy, but we must do it smartly and safely.
That's Governor Cuomo with the State of the State address yesterday, Jim. As more governors speak out about vaccine guidelines, I know you've mentioned Florida earlier in the hour. Governor DeSantis says that HHS now is basically telling states to do what Florida is doing, that almost 400,000 seniors in Florida have received a shot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know there are a lot of people who feel that Florida's a free-for-all. I've gotten a lot of email even since I mentioned I want to go there to get it, but I'm not saying I'm getting from an undisclosed area, but South Florida's been moving pretty quickly. Governor Cuomo, obviously a bit at odds with the mayor. I mean, look, I've mothballed my restaurant, my bar. It's really cold outside. You can have all the heaters in the world. People are just not that interested in eating outside right now. There are ways. I mean, Dr. Kimberly Prather, who is probably the foremost person who's talking with the Biden task force about how to open something, it involves how to control the aerosol. You need carbon dioxide monitors like they have in Japan. You need ventilation. I wish that people would talk about how a handbook of how to open, but there is none, and it's pure chaos. And I think Governor Cuomo was right. It really takes a strong constitution and making it so that a restaurant is really just a hobby to stay. So I do hope that there's some coordination between the mayor and the governor. It's been suboptimal between the two. Boy, I love that word.
No, it's a definite stumble out of the block. This is what the mayor said on New York One yesterday about the ongoing early vaccine process.
The real world problem is going to be lack of vaccine. At the rate we're going, we're going to be out in 2 weeks or so. If we don't start to get bigger resupplies, you know, we're talking about a constantly escalating level of giving vaccines here. 100,000 this last week, we hit that goal. We're going to hit 175,000 this week. By the last week of January, it's going to be 400,000 we can do in a week. Mm-hmm. The question is going to be, is there going to be vaccine to actually achieve our goals?
So they're giving vaccines, Jim, in New York City 24 hours a day now.
Right.
Actually, the issue now is public transportation to those sites in the middle of the night. But it sounds like you don't think a shortage is going to be the issue.
No, I mean, I look, the mayor ought to get, all the bookers have Pfizer. You could call Meg, get the Pfizer phone number, call McKesson, and get all the vaccine you want. But that requires a tremendous amount of digging. You got to watch CNBC. You got to call Meg. You got to get those numbers. No, forget it. No, it's just forget that I even mentioned that. That's way too hard.
Hey, we're a public service, Jim, in all kinds of ways.
Well, maybe he doesn't know.
We'll take a short break here. Don't go anywhere. We're back in a minute. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
Bulldogs tend not to like Alabama, so it's probably disappointing for anyone who is a University of Georgia supporter. But you know what? There's something good to be saying about Jenna Drosos and Signet, who is a huge Georgia fan and has done a remarkable job. If you take a look at SIG, the jeweler, you will see a comeback like you wouldn't believe. It's not being heralded enough. I've got to give this CEO incredible credit for a company that many people thought could not survive this period. What a run, and it's not over, Jenna Drosos.
Wow. It flies in the face of so many things we'd heard about luxury, Jim, and jewelry in particular. Well, I can't wait to hear more.
Maybe that's just because she's a great CEO.
How about tonight?
Okay, I got a company called Car Auction Services. I'm looking for anything involving auto because auto is so hot. And I can't wait to hear Mary Barra today for Phil LeBeau, because this is a move in the in the tangential autos, like Ford and GM, not to be believed. And I'm trying to catch it any way I can, whether it be Lithia Motors, whether it be Car Auction Services. We got to be there, Carl. And, of course, anything EV. If those two letters are behind it, I'm on it.
Yeah, Mary Barra at 11:30. We'll see you tonight, Jim.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.